Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Herbie, let's go.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
Previously on The Lawrence Holmes Show.
Just saw this tweeted out from Scott Merkin. Chris Getz says Nick Madrigal is, quote, very close, close quote, to being ready.
Real nice. He got better in Schaumburg. Who could say that in their whole life, that you got better by going to Schaumburg? Sorry, people in Schaumburg. You know your city is terrible.
He just needed 6 days. That was all he needed to get better. But well,
folks at Rolling Meadows, those are excellent people.
Sure. The folks in Schaumburg are fine. But people don't usually go to Schaumburg to get better. They usually go to Schaumburg to go to GameWorks.
Make me a bicycle, clown!
And that led to all sorts of trash being talked on the Tech Zone. People from Rolling Meadows, people from Schaumburg, people from Streamwood, all had something to say. Then Bruce Miles came on the show and he was calling from Schaumburg. It was a whole thing. Welcome into the show. I'm Lawrence Holmes here with you until 2 o'clock today. We have a lot of stuff to get to and a lot of news stories. We will try to have as much fun as possible on the show. Here are the guests that we're planning to talk with. Mark Lazarus is going to join me at 12:20. Why? Because hockey is getting ready to start. The Blackhawks are in their play-in situation. They start play tomorrow against Edmonton, so we're going to talk with him and preview the restart for the Blackhawks and whether or not they can win this series against Edmonton. Rick Damkamp is going to be on the show at 1 o'clock, the host of the Basketball Camp podcast. I was listening to it this morning. Yeah, Campy's doing all right for himself. He's got himself some sponsors and everything. He also hosts the I'm Fat podcast with Jay Zawoski, and they had an episode where they were talking about the menu shrinking at a couple different places, so we'll talk to him about that too. Pete Futek is going to join me at 1:30 because the NCAA is at it again. Because they stay at it, like, all the time. They're really, really awful, and I don't know if there's any need for them. But we'll talk with Pete about that and all of the conferences making their changes for football. The SEC is like, well, we're not going to play until the end of September now. And it's only going to be the teams that are in the conference. And Notre Dame is now in the ACC, kind of. With their schedule, I still think that spring football is a better idea, but they're going to at least continue to pay lip service to trying to figure this out. I've heard in some places that the threshold is 8, that everyone will feel okay if they can get 8 games in, and that's why they have a 10-game schedule. But everything seems to be very difficult to pull off, including baseball right now. If you hadn't heard, the Cardinals and the Brewers were supposed to play. They are not playing today. That game was supposed to be, I think, a 1:10 first pitch. They're not playing today. They're probably not going to play tomorrow, but we'll see. And then there's a scheduled doubleheader for them
on Sunday, and we'll see what happens there. The White Sox are supposed to play the Brewers starting next week. It's getting very messy in Major League Baseball. As it stands right now, there's 20% of the teams in MLB that are not going to play. At least today, and we know that the Marlins aren't coming back until next week. Have you heard how the Marlins are getting themselves, the sick Marlins, are getting themselves back to Miami? They're going to pack onto a bus. I wonder how much that bus driver is getting paid. Because there's going to be a minimum of 20 coronavirus positive people on a bus from Philadelphia to Miami. The healthy Marlins are going to stay in Philadelphia until they figure out what it is that they're going to do with the rest of the season. All of it is a mess. Now, the good thing, and Jesse had reported this, Jesse Rogers had reported this, that they might not have shut down the Cardinals-Brewers series if it wasn't for what happened with the Marlins. So maybe there's some applied learning. It's just really difficult to pull this off. And it's going to be made more difficult each time that something like this happens. Here's a statement from the Cardinals on what's happening with their team. The St. Louis Cardinals learned late last night that two players have tested positive for COVID-19 in testing that was conducted on Wednesday, July 29th, prior to their game against the Twins in Minneapolis, and have instructed the team's players and staff to self-isolate in their Milwaukee hotel rooms until further notice. The team did not leave their hotel this morning for Miller Park. The team is currently conducting rapid testing of the entire traveling party, has implemented a contact tracing, and will continue to self-isolate. Now, I'm not an epidemiologist, but isn't the whole point of contact tracing to make it so that people who did come in contact with people who tested positive are quarantined for 10 to 14 days? And if you're the White Sox, if you had plans to stay in the same hotel that the Cardinals are staying at in Milwaukee, have you now changed your plans? Are you going to change your plans and stay in a different place? Or are you just going to, like, how about this? We'll play you, and then we're going to drive home, and then we're going to drive back, and then we're going to drive home, and then we're going to drive back. I don't know what's the safer option at this point. And these are the questions that all of us end up like left with on whether or not this can work. MLB is doing a very delicate tap dance on trying to get as much money as they can, which is their right, while also trying to look and appear like safety is really important to them. And I question, like, even in this statement from the Cardinals, where they're telling you that two players tested positive. Well, did anyone else test positive? And there's been a lot of questions about some of the shell game shenanigans that MLB is doing when they report on testing. When they start giving you the percentages. Oh, well, we did this many tests, and look at how low the rate is. That's cool. You test one player four times, and one of those times he tests positive. The other three times he tests negative, and you're able to throw that into a pool of tests and be like, look at how low this percentage is. I'm as happy as anyone that baseball is on my television screen. But I don't know how much further down the road can you go if you're knocking games off the schedule. And if you're the Brewers and then the White Sox, or if you're the Twins, are you looking around like, wait, what? What do you mean? Like, you're going to test everyone today and then we're supposed to take that and be like, oh, it's cool? Have the Phillies even played baseball? That's what I'm – it's so hard to understand how this will work. And even with people who are clearly well-intended around baseball, there's going to be more of this. At the beginning of the week, the thought was, okay, well, now it's isolated. It's an East Coast thing. And the teams in the Central and the West aren't playing any of those teams. So here's an opportunity for it to be mitigated. But these players are still traveling. My hope is that there will be less of this. But hope isn't a great strategy, is it? Let me take you back to Cincinnati last night. This is another example of the tightrope that is being walked by Major League Baseball, where it's about revenue and it's about getting games played and maybe less about safety. Anthony Rizzo tweeted out a very interesting question to Major League Baseball, and he tagged them, asking about how safe it is for the players to be in the clubhouse for 8 hours when the radar clearly showed that you weren't going to be able to play baseball last night in Cincinnati. That it wasn't going to be possible for them to be playing. There's an argument that maybe that's the safest place to be. I would say that there's a counter argument that that is not the case, because you're probably safest by yourself. But whatever. Guys have got masks on, but they're just sitting there. And yes, they could walk around the ballpark if they want it. And they could sit in really uncomfortable seats in the ballpark. But for 8 hours, when there really wasn't a window for you to play, and then as soon as you got to game time, you were like, oh, we're not going to play. That's a waste of time and resources. But it's all in an attempt to try and make sure that games get played. And what's the reason why they have to be so fervent about getting games played? Because they ran out of time on their calendar. Because the initial way that this was going to work was 60 games in 66 days. Now you're going to have all sorts of teams trying to make up games without rainouts, without what happened to the Cubs and the Reds last night. And then trying to balance that. But because you slow played the negotiations, you're stuck. And now you're like, well, let's play 2 7-inning games in doubleheaders. Okay. We're going to fundamentally change baseball now. And I'm someone who's fine with the DH in both leagues, because at least there's a precedent for that inside baseball already because of interleague play. But now it's like, nah, you know what? We got to squeeze all these games in, so let's just make them 7 innings. Cool. I'm glad that players are speaking up on some of this stuff, and I'm glad that Anthony Rizzo tagged MLB and was like, what are we doing? Like, we're just sitting here when we could have just come home. You could have canceled the game 3 hours ago and we could have been home instead of sitting in this dugout and this clubhouse for the rest of the night. I know no one signed up for this at Major League Baseball. I get it. I get that we are all in a place where we have to learn and adapt very quickly. Through a week of baseball, does it seem like they've learned and adapted quickly to you? I'm scared for these guys. As much as I'm enjoying watching highlights from all over the league, I'm terrified for these guys. Because even as well-intended as Major League Baseball is trying to seem like they are, look at where we're at. Look at how dangerous this is. We're going to take a break. When we come back, hockey has a different approach to this. I'm going to talk with Mark Lazarus about that as they get ready to restart. The Blackhawks play the Oilers. We're going to preview that series. It's next here on The Score.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
Hawks with a man advantage as Kane with a strip from Gunnarsson. Kane rolled it back. Keith again to Kane. Kuzman is the block from the score. Kubalik set up by Doc. What a play by Kirby Doc. Recognizing as he found the puck that Kubalik had a free stick and bang. A power play tally.
I didn't find it strange at all watching the Blackhawks play the Blues a couple nights ago that there were no fans. It didn't bother me one bit. I am looking forward to watching their play-in series, their qualifying round that they have with Edmonton to get themselves into the Stanley Cup playoffs. I wanted to talk with Mark Lazarus about this because the Blackhawks are back on the ice for real starting tomorrow. He joins me now on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford has 500 new and used vehicles for you to choose from. You can go check it out in Melrose Park or alpamonteford.com. Mark Lazarus does a great job of covering hockey and some other stuff for The Athletic. He's a senior writer there, and he's a friend of the show. Glad to have him aboard. Hello, sir.
How you doing, Lawrence?
I'm doing all right. I know that you wrote a piece about the broadcasting aspect with Edzo being out in Connecticut. What did you think of the first Blackhawks broadcast?
You know, it wasn't bad. I mean, they did a pretty good job of, you know, Pat and Eddie have been together for so long, and I'm sure it'll be the same thing with Doc Emrick on the national game tomorrow, that they kind of know their rhythms, whether they're next to each other or not. They know when the other guy wants to talk. So I don't think it's going to be too much of a problem. It's tough for the play-by-play guys because, you know, you might not be able to see which player is which. You know, you can't see the jersey numbers if the camera's obscured. There's a guy in the way. So it's not going to be quite the tape-to-tape broadcast that you usually hear. But I thought Pat and Eddie did a really good job.
Yeah, me too. I enjoyed the broadcast, and I'm looking forward to maybe some more broadcasts. You wrote about this. Why do you think that this matchup between the Blackhawks and the Oilers might be the most entertaining qualifying game round?
Because nobody plays defense on either of these teams. It'll be great. It'll be a track meet, the kind of hockey you like to see. I mean, you got Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl on one side. You got Patrick Kane, Jonathan Toews, Dominic Kubalik on the other side. Goaltending for Edmonton is not a strong suit. Corey Crawford is a fantastic goalie, but he literally just got on the ice like 5 days ago for the first time this summer. So there's a lot of opportunity for this to be a very high scoring series. The Oilers have the third or fourth best power play in the history of hockey. So a lot of it's going to come down to the Blackhawks special teams. Can they get a power play goal here and there to keep up? And can their penalty kill do the job? It's going to be an entertaining series. A lot of skill, a lot of speed. You know, the Blackhawks, I mean, we think of them as this old team because they got these core guys, but they're the youngest team out of the 24 playing right now. So there's a lot to be excited about. This. It should be a really good competitive series.
What does it mean for the Hawks to have Crawford back?
Oh, it's everything. I mean, no offense to Malcolm Subban or Colin Delia or Kevin Lankinen, and they're all really good, promising young goalies. But, I mean, Corey Crawford's won 2 Stanley Cups. He could have won the Conn Smythe in 2013. He is a fantastic, proven playoff goalie, and he's one of the best goalies in the world. He had a .928 save percentage over the last 3 months of the season. That's why Robin Leonard got traded. He was expendable, and the Blackhawks couldn't afford to keep him much longer. So Crawford makes this it's realistic for the Blackhawks to win this series with Corey Crawford. It probably wasn't without him.
How much more hockey do you think Corey has left in him?
You know, it's interesting because he didn't get into the NHL until he was kind of, you know, he spent like 5 or 6 years in the AHL. So he's a, you know, a young 35 or 36, whatever he is, in terms of NHL terms. And he missed a year and a half recently. It's kind of up to him. He's still in great shape. He's still playing really, really well. You know, we thought when he had those 2 concussions that took him out of the better part of 2 seasons that he should probably retire. And, you know, he's got 2 young kids at home. But he's showing he's past that now. And you know, he's going to play as long as he wants to play. He can still be a good goalie for a few more years. We've seen, you know, Henrik Lundqvist, Roberto Luongo, If you keep yourself in good shape, you can be competitive for a long time. And Crawford's success isn't based on those hyper-athletic saves. He's not like flopping around the crease like Robin Leonard or Dominic Hasek. He's so good at tracking the puck, and he's always so square to the shooters that, you know, even if he loses a little bit of athleticism as he ages, he's not going to lose that much in terms of his game, because his game is all based on positioning and just being in the right spot.
Because he has so many pucks hit him in the chest, is that better or worse for rebound chances for the other team?
Well, I mean, if you get it in the chest, you're going to be able to smother it. I mean, the rebounds are going to come when you're making those, like, you know, flashy kick saves and pad stops and swatting away with your blocker. And, you know, Crawford's always had pretty good rebound control. You're never going to be perfect, and you're always going to have – it only takes one or two. That's the thing. And in the playoffs kind of hockey especially, those ugly goals tend to be the ones that get scored as teams try to tighten up a little bit defensively. But Crawford's game, he's never gotten the respect. You know, he's probably one of the most underappreciated athletes in modern Chicago sports history. But, you know, he's done it time and time again. There's no reason to think he couldn't do it again.
I'm glad that you brought that up, Mark Lazarus of The Athletic. It's one of the things that I talk about on this show a lot is the disrespect that seems to follow Corey Crawford around. What is that a byproduct of? Is it a byproduct of, you know, Taves and Kane kind of being the guys? Like, is it just that people have gotten so spoiled as Blackhawks fans that there's less of an appreciation for what it is that he contributes to the winning?
Yeah, I've always joked that if he had like some French-Canadian sounding last name, that he'd be considered one of the best goalies in modern history in the NHL. But he's got such a nondescript name, even though he's from Montreal, so he doesn't get the credit. But I think a lot of that is he's overshadowed. There's so many stars on those teams, 2013, 2015, with Taves and Kane and Keith and Seabrook and Sharp and Hossa, all these great players that people kind of – it's like a system quarterback in football, right? It's like, Corey Crawford is just a Trent Dilfer type. He's just managing the game. And that's not an accurate representation of what he's been able to accomplish. But they won the Cup in 2010 with Antti Niemi. And Antti Niemi has proven to not be that good a goalie over the course of his career. So I think some of it is that, you know, you see like, well, I could go and play goalie behind that team and win a Stanley Cup, and it's a ridiculous thing to say, but that's kind of how he's been interpreted over the years. But I think we've seen since the 2015 Cup, in 2016 and 2017 in particular, just how much Corey Crawford carries this team now that it's not as good as it used to be. So I think his value was evident in his absence those 2 years he missed with the concussions, and also just on how he kept that 2016-2017 team won 50 games with one line, with that Panarin-Kane line. And it was because Corey Crawford was just that good. I think, you know, he's not disrespected now the way he was 5 or 6 years ago. The second cup kind of put him back over the top, but he still doesn't get the credit he probably deserves.
How do you think Subban played? I get it, it's only a period and a half. I mean, you're trying to do this stuff on the fly if you're the NHL, but would you consider him to be someone who would be a prospect for replacing Crawford?
I mean, it's conceivable. He had a kind of up and down time in Vegas where he was really, really good in the minors, and every time he came up, it just didn't work. He wasn't successful in the NHL, so he's got all the skill. He's a really good position. He's got great athleticism. I don't know if he's in the Blackhawks' long-term plans, because Colin Delia and Kevin Lankinen are both, you know, kind of homegrown guys. They got Lankinen from Finland. He won the world championship. Delia played a little bit a couple years ago and acquitted himself well, and he's on a really team-friendly contract, a couple more years at $1 million a year. So I don't know if there's a spot for Subban going forward. He was kind of throwing in the Leonard trade just to balance out the goalie situation. But he looked good in camp. I mean, there's a reason. You can see why he was considered a really high-end goalie prospect. So it's not inconceivable the Blackhawks could keep him long-term.
Okay, then let's talk about the guys in front of him. Defense has been an issue. You're talking about a team that was giving up, 35 shots a game. Is there any reason to believe that the version of the Blackhawks we're going to see starting tomorrow is better on defense than the version that we saw back in March?
Yes, absolutely, because you got Calvin DeHaan back. I mean, you have your second pairing now of Calvin DeHaan and Connor Murphy. That's a good second pairing. It might not be Oduya Jalmerson, but it's not that far off. Those are two solid, good defensemen. Calvin DeHaan was playing terrific hockey. Duncan Keith was hurt, and he was playing great hockey. He looked like a number one defenseman when he hurt his shoulder and was out for the rest of the year. Getting him back is huge because now you can put Mata and Cuckoo or Lucas Carlson on that third pairing in a more limited role, and you've got Keith Boquist on your top line. That's going to create some offense. DeHaan and Murphy are both really steady, stay-at-home defensemen. Look, this is not a good defense, team defense-wise, until they prove it. You know, it's all speculation, but this is the best roster the Blackhawks have had this season. The team they're bringing, that they brought to Edmonton, is on paper at least better than anything we saw from them all year long.
We came in with a Kubalik goal. Which line do you think that he should play on?
No, he's got to be on the top line. It was weird that he was back on the third line throughout summer camp, throughout phase three. But you know, Colleton did the right. I don't know if it was some kind of weird long con or what. But he belongs on Jonathan Toews' left wing. He's had a lot of success there. He's just such a – he's fun to watch. He's got this motor on him where he's just relentless, and he's always around the puck, and he's always getting chances. Toews has that ability to play heavy and to set guys up through traffic that, you know, Kubalik can get that big shot. He got Saad on the right side. He just crashed the net, that big body with great speed. It's a perfect combination of lines. It didn't always have the best success during the season in the short amount of time they were together, but that is the best trio you can put together short of putting Toews and Kane on the same line.
Mark Lazarus of The Athletic is joining me here on The Score as we talk about the Blackhawks, who are getting ready to restart their season tomorrow as they start their qualifying series with Edmonton in Edmonton. What's that experience been like from people that you talk to? The hub city experience and it being two Canadian cities to get this thing restarted?
Well, first of all, it's great. That's the one NHL, the advantage NHL had over everybody else. They could just send everybody to Canada, which is doing a much better job of managing the pandemic than we are. So everyone seems like it's pretty safe. I'm working on a story about life on the bubble, over the weekend. And, you know, the players, like, it's a little weird, but it's not that bad. I mean, everything is kind of, you know, when you're in the playoffs, you're not going out all the time anyway. You're not, you know, you're kind of laser focused and you just want to, like, play hockey, practice hockey, eat and go to sleep, and that's really all they can do in the bubble. I mean, there's ping pong tables and golf simulators by the rink and things like that, but for the most part, you know, they just stay at their hotel, which is a 2-minute walk to the arena. They go back and forth. They got a little lounge in the hotel. Each team has its own lounge where they can play video games, watch games. I mean, it's going to be like March Madness. There's going to be hockey on all day, every day for the first week. It's going to be amazing, and so these guys are just going to be sitting around watching hockey like the rest of us. It's going to be great.
What do you think the NHL got right, and what concerns you?
Well, it's so weird to say the NHL got something right, isn't it? I mean, Gary Bettman did a really good job. Those are words that don't normally come out of anyone's mouth. So they had built-in advantages. A, they had the Canadian option. They really wanted to go to Vegas, but they realized that was a terrible idea. So kudos to them for switching on the fly there. But they also had the advantage of that there's already a 50-50 revenue split in the CBA. So they were, you know, miles down the road in terms of getting this stuff off the ground. And, like, you know, we saw the acrimony in baseball because they're trying to figure out how to pay these guys. In hockey, it doesn't matter. It's 50-50. So they're both working towards the same goal because they're both going to get – they just need to get paid. And you don't have to worry about negotiating all that. So it's part of it is that, you know, that lame hockey culture where everyone just kind of subsumes themselves for the good of the team, the good of the league. There isn't a lot of infighting. Though there has been some, you know, Patrick Kane was a little worried early on about some of the protocols, and Jonathan Toews was skeptical about how they were going to pull this off. But logistically, it's pretty remarkable to talk to people in the bubble how well everything is organized, how many things have been thought of, how well the players are taken care of. It seems to be, of all the major sports, it seems to be the one that's gotten this the most right.
Is there anything to be concerned about?
Well, sure, you got a bunch of guys spitting and face-washing and coughing and sharing water bottles all over each other for the next 2.5 months. If one guy gets COVID, a whole lot of guys are going to get COVID. So there's always going to be a concern. But, you know, I talked to an epidemiologist not that long ago about it, and he said the NHL plan makes, you know, the most sense. The bubble is the right thing to do. And, you know, the NBA is doing it right, but they're in Florida, and Florida's going to Florida. So that's terrifying in that respect. But, you know, Edmonton and Toronto, they've got this under control for the most part. And you saw in both leagues that the testing, you know, nobody's testing positive these last couple of weeks. So if they got everybody into the bubble healthy, then in reality, everyone should stay healthy.
Now, this may just be a product of me not having seen everyone's Zoom press conferences. You've covered Jonathan Toews for forever. I don't know if I've ever seen him look as relaxed as he is on these Zooms. Is that a thing? Has he changed, or am I just imagining things?
Well, I mean, he's certainly mellowed over the years. I mean, the Captain Serious thing, that was like in his early 20s when he would, you know, just stew all the time and take everything. So, I mean, he's been he's loosened up considerably over the 8 years that I've covered him. But, yeah, he's, you know, we'll see what happens once the playoffs actually start. You know, playoff Taves is different than regular season Taves. But Taves has this confidence about him now that has grown over the years, where he doesn't stress about this stuff. And it's interesting because he's got that reputation as being this like super stern, high strung type A guy, and it's really not accurate. You see him in the summer on Instagram, and he's, you know, out there, you know, wakeboarding and going to Machu Picchu, and you know that he's a pretty chill guy. He's out there, he's, you know, doing his little urban gardening and all that. He is a more well-rounded adult, I think, than a lot of professional athletes, especially in hockey. I mean, you think about these hockey guys, half of them didn't even go to high school. If you're a superstar player in junior hockey, you're not even in high school. So they're not fully formed adults sometimes. Jonathan Taves is a fully formed adult with a functioning brain and his own opinions on things, and you don't always have to agree with them. But he has reached a point in his 30s now where he is very confident and comfortable with who he is. And, yeah, I do think that he's relaxed over the years, certainly.
Yeah, I think that what you just said is he is comfortable in his own skin now, and I like it. He's one of my favorite athletes that I've ever covered in Chicago, and I do like that he has started to express himself on other issues that have become important to him, and that he's fearless. The same way he's fearless on the ice, like he's fearless when it comes to that, and he seems to be willing to learn and evolve his opinion on things too, which I think is very impressive, because I think a lot of people say, okay, this is how I feel and no one can change my mind. And he seems to be like, this is how I feel and this is why I feel this way. But I'm willing to take in other stimuli.
Right. I remember when Leonardo DiCaprio won like the Oscar for The Revenant a few years ago, and he talked about climate change, and Jonathan Taves, you know, quote tweeted it and talked about climate change. People are like clutching their pearls. Oh my God, a hockey player is taking a political stance on something. And he's backed off a little bit since then. He got some flack just during phase three for, you know, his COVID comments were curious. He was talking about like, you know, we don't know how this thing is really transmitted, and I hope the fans can come back. And a lot of us were like, wait, that doesn't, you know, sound like what we want to hear from you. But he's not afraid to share his opinion. He's comfortable in his skin. He's confident with who he is. He knows that, you know, he does his own research, and he says what's on his mind, which is a rarity in the hockey world.
It is. Well, one more thing before I let you go. You spent some time talking with Brent Seabrook. I really enjoyed the piece. Now, he's not in the bubble, correct?
He is not.
What did you take away from that conversation about his rehab and how he feels right now?
He is pain-free for the first time, he said, in, you know, 5-10 years. He hurt his shoulder back in the World Juniors in 2004. Jeremy Colleton was his teammate back then. That's how long he's been dealing with a shoulder injury, and his back and his hips have been messed up for years. He feels great. He thinks he's going to come back and be a great player again. What's interesting is that it almost, you know, obliquely, he sounded like he was opening the door to going to another team, where he said, I don't know what Stan and Jeremy's plan for me is, but I'm playing hockey next year. And now to move Brent Seabrook's contract would be incredibly difficult. You'd have to, you know, retain a bunch of salary. You'd probably have to throw in some sweeteners, like a prospect or picks. And you'd have to find a team willing to take on that contract, which has 4 years left on it. It's $6.875 million. But Brent Seabrook's not going out like this. He is not going to be, he's not going to disappear into the wild of long-term injured reserve. He's going to play hockey again. He went through all of phase three and he looks good. He expects to be on the Blackhawks in December when the next season starts. And, for better or worse, I wouldn't bet against him.
I'm with you on that, too. I thought it was really good. Like, you and Scott have just been doing great work on The Athletic, and I enjoyed your team up with the writer who covers the Oilers as well in previewing this series. I hope that we get the chance to talk more Hawks hockey and not like doing the obit for the season for them. I'd like to see them advance into the Stanley Cup playoffs, because I think that they have enough talent to make it interesting for whomever they would match up with next.
It's a long shot, but there's skill and there's a whole lot of experience still in that room, and that still carries some weight.
Mark, thanks so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Anytime, Lawrence. Thanks.
That's Mark Lazarus, who covers the Blackhawks for The Athletic. I'm looking forward to it. And like I was telling Mark, I stumbled across this, and I talked about it on LoHo Daily. I stumbled across the Blackhawks game, the replay of the Blackhawks game. And I turned it on. I was like, It wasn't weird that there was no crowd. I did kind of dig what the NBA did last night. I don't know if you paid any attention to it. I want to talk about that. And I also want to talk about a baseball story that we cannot lose sight of because of COVID. I'll explain next here on The Score.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
The absence of games obviously changes how you evaluate readiness, and it's just one of the anomalies of this season and one of the challenges of this season that every team's presented with. In the end, we want Nick to be in a good position to succeed when he gets here. Part of that is being able to play on an everyday basis and not being on the bench. So ultimately, it's going to come down to, you know, his level of consistency and what we're seeing from an evaluation standpoint in Schaumburg, as well as what opportunities present themselves in Chicago to make sure he's going to get the opportunity to play every day when the time comes.
White Sox general manager Rick Hahn talking about Nick Madrigal. Nick Madrigal is probably going to be in the White Sox lineup tonight when the White Sox take on Kansas City. His contract has been purchased. He has been put on the active, and the White Sox have designated Kelvin Herrera for assignment. And you heard what Hahn said. They want to make sure that if he's playing with the big club, that he's playing every day. I mean, I guess he learned a lot in a week in Schaumburg. I mean, I guess one can learn a lot in a week in Schaumburg.
It's a miracle. Amazing.
It's a Madrigal, actually. But yes, it is amazing. So Herbie, let's have a little fun with this. Texters, if you would text into the text zone. And the text zone is brought to you by Rosen Hyundai of Algonquin. Save time, shop online at rosenhyundai.com. What do you think you can learn with a week in Schaumburg? Just let me know what you think one could learn. It doesn't even have to be about baseball. Just in general, what can one learn after spending 1 week in Schaumburg, a.k.a. Schaum Vegas, a.k.a. Schaumpton? You tell me and let me know. But yes, it is amazing, Herbie, that a week ago he was not ready for the majors, and now he is ready for the majors.
I wonder if there's another reason, possibly, that he would spend 6 days down in Schaumburg.
Like exactly six, too.
Yeah, would it benefit the White Sox at all if he would just, you know, come up today instead of last week?
Right. I don't know. It would seem like there might be a service time component that maybe plays a role in it. But no, it's probably he just learned some stuff. And the Texans are coming in with their thoughts on this.
I know what he learned.
What did he learn?
The Elgin O'Hare Expressway neither goes to Elgin nor O'Hare. That's what
true.
You can learn in Schaumburg.
You can learn that. This texture says, what's a Schaumburg? This 630 texture says, what is the best time for there to be a short line at Portillo's? That's key if you want to get your Portillo's on. 847 texture says, they want him to be able to navigate Woodfield. Fine. This texture says, I live here. Been here the last 5 years after living in the city first 41 years of my life. I learned it's too damn quiet. Schaumburg's quiet? All them lights? This 847 texter says, wait, I don't know if I can say this because it's going to get me in trouble. Yeah, I can't say that, texter. Why are you trying to get me jammed up with the Schaumburg PD? I see your text, and it's funny, but how about you not put me in danger, all right? This texter says, I learned a lot in one night in Schaumburg and had zero to do with baseball, but it's a lesson I'll never forget. That's what I imagine. This texter says they have the best bread ever. I love when you all come to play. I truly, truly do. You end up making the show fun for me, which is the key. This texter says you learn that Golf Road and Higgins Road are no Gouda. It's from the blind chauffeur. Keep at it. It'll be a running theme for the show today. Just keep texting in. 312-644-6767. That's the number to the text zone. And it's brought to you by Rosen Hyundai of Algonquin. Save time, shop online at rosenhyundai.com. By the way, we are broadcasting live from the Score Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers like Rosen Hyundai. There was another signing, this one on the north side. You remember Cody Allen? Remember him from 2016? Going up against the Cubs in the World Series? Well, he had been pitching for Texas. They released him earlier this week. You know as well as I do that the bullpen situation is a situation for the Cubs. So they've got to try and find arms. Cody Allen's been signed to a minor league deal. So he goes to South Bend until someone doesn't do the job. I suspect that Cody Allen will find his way to the Cubs roster soon. Let me take a couple more texts. This texter says that Ruby Rose was a bad choice for Batwoman. I don't think she was a bad choice. I do think they need to rework a lot of stuff on that show. I'm sad that she's not playing the role anymore, but it looks like the lady that they have playing the role is going to be particularly badass. So I'm looking forward to it. Shout out to you for texting in the Batwoman text. This texter said, I learned that Streamwood Walmart is the worst Walmart. I don't know about that, fam. But people have not great things to say about Streamwood. That's what I learned from yesterday's text. People don't like Streamwood. This texter says, here's what you can learn in a week in Schaumburg. White people love IKEA. Do they? Is that right? I don't know if that's a thing. 630 texter says, Madrigal in a week in Schaumburg could learn the deliciousness of Raising Cane's chicken. Herbie, have you been to Raising Cane's?
I have, but not in Schaumburg. But yeah, delicious.
Okay, I've never been to Raising Cane's. Like, even when I'm in the South, like, I haven't been to Raising Cane's.
There's one in Harwood Heights, that's which I went to a lot of times. I think there's one in like Rogers Park. It's not a drive-through, but I think there's a nice Raising Cane's there. Their chicken fingers and the bread they give you, delicious.
All right, you sold me. We'll ask Rick Camp about that. He hosts the I'm Fat podcast with Jay Zawoski. He also hosts a pretty significant basketball podcast called Basketball Camp. We'll talk with Rick Camp about the NBA restart and why Taco Bell's menu is shrinking. Next, here on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.